Hey everybody, it's Sunny. Just wanted to give you a quick heads up that you're listening on the iTunes feed. Go to subbeacon.com, sign up at the Patreon, it'll be great. And we'll see you over there in the comments, okay? And please enjoy this episode and go to the Patreon for members-only episodes that are there forever and nowhere else. Okay, bye.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Jonathan V. Lass and Sunny Bunch. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is now available through Patreon. Go to subbeacon.com. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and don't forget about the Subbeacon merchandise store at tpublic.com. We're doing it live. We're doing it live. That's all I have to say for people who are wondering. We had some technical difficulties, but we're back now.
Why would anybody be wondering? We deleted everything and we're starting over again. Vic, now that you're telling everyone, now they'll be like, oh, what did we miss? What gold?
Well, you missed.
What
it was
gold
really,
did we miss on the first
it
version
was
of the
really
show?
Really good stuff, and the premium listeners will love it.
There's probably an emergency MP3 of it somewhere. Maybe we'll make that a bonus episode for
along with like our experimental first episode, which wasn't that like Jack Reacher. Or was that the actual Ooh. First episode?
No, that was the actual first episode.
Yeah, the actual first episode.
I don't even remember what the experimental one was. Sonny, I'm looking at you drinking a beer, and I'm betting, looking at the back label of it, that you're drinking Shinerbach.
Yes.
Because you are, and you are in Texas.
Because I'm a Texan now, and in Texas, we drink Shinerbach, we drink Velvet Hammer, drink Dallas Blonde.
Does anyone drink Lone Star? Or is that like...
People drink Lone Star. People drink Lone Star. Lone Star is like, I think Lone Star is in the PBR family. I think it's basically the same beer.
I got just the with sense. Like a different I get the vibe that it's a PBR-ish as opposed to Shiner.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah. It's all fine. Beer is beer. Whatever.
So what is going on with you?
This week has sucked for me because our 2-year-old, like some administrator at his school got COVID. So they like shut down the whole school. The whole school is just, they sent everybody home, and it's been great. So he's been home for all week.
Is it an administrator that is in close contact with your child?
Well, this is what I don't understand. This is what I don't understand about the incompetence of this school that we send our child to is, you know, in theory, all right, look, if you get unlucky and the teacher catches COVID, I get it. The class has to shut down. You know, that's one thing. But to shut down literally every classroom in the building because somebody was apparently somebody in the school is in close contact. So that's at least 15 minutes, you know, within 6 feet. I don't understand how this is possible. I think they're just idiots and they're a bunch of incompetent morons.
And now you're
I think that's actually what's going on here.
And now you're trying to hunt down the name to find out who it is.
Well, that would be an actual HIPAA violation. Telling us who it is would be an actual HIPAA violation without their permission, unlike all the fake HIPAA violations. But, I mean, there's only a handful of people it could be. There's really only like 3 or 4 people it could be, period, in the whole school. So anyway, it's been wonderful having my 2-year-old home while I do my various jobs and podcasts and writing and editing.
It's a magical age.
It's not at all like 2020 all over again. It's not like that. Oh, it's exactly like that. at a certain point, I'm at the point where like at a certain point we just like it's the disease. Everyone's gonna get it, and we got. I'm just getting it over with. Fucking tired of it. Tired of it.
How long is the quarantine, as it were?
Oh, like all through next week. It's like 14 days. 14 days.
That's right.
It's 14 days. To be safe, you should probably make it 21.
Should be 100 days. Nobody should ever go back in that school. They should nuke it from orbit.
Maybe 2022.
They should burn it to the ground. Nobody should ever go in a movie theater again. Everyone should just live in their hermetically sealed bubbles. And we'll all be fine. And nobody will ever get hurt. We'll all live underground. And we'll have the machine can send us the food that we need.
No,
and the
stop now! You're turning JBL on. He's getting really excited.
Humming.
keep going. Yes.
So anyway, that's what my week has
been. That's unfortunate.
Like. It's really annoying. And again, it'd be one thing if it was like your class, your teacher in your classroom caught COVID. Your teacher who is fully vaccinated, somebody who is fully vaccinated got COVID and whatever. Like that happens. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. Mm-hmm. Luck of the draw, roll of the dice, whatever.
But this is
is the whole upper part of the school. Shut down because some jerk got the disease and they don't have the pods.
And didn't want to lie. And just say, I'm sure it's just a sniffle.
And the worst part
I'm sure it's fine, not get tested.
The worst part is
that's what I would do. I say, yeah. No, I'm not getting tested. Yeah. No way.
The worst part is like the excuses that they're making. They came to us with this whole long sheet of like, well, because we're a private school and not a public school, we have different rules from different judges. And this asshole judge in Dallas who keeps telling everybody they have to wear masks all the time in all the places. And then he gets shut down by the legislature. But some things don't get shut. It just is it's a mess here.
Thank you, Sonny.
So anyway, that's what's going on in my
life. Thank you. That's great. JVL, what's going on with you?
So you know that that tone of voice that the five-year-olds get where you hear them, they're calling you from somewhere else in the house, and you cannot tell if like they just won $1 million or if they've cut their finger off.
Right, it's like
you know what I mean, like that
excitement.
Dad,
or is it
Dad!
Excitement or terror?
Right, and it could be either one of those. So I get that tone of voice from G Money a couple days ago, and I'm halfway across the house, and I go run like Chav King Arthur, running over to him, and it turns out he's in the bathroom, and he's up on it doing his business. And I go in and I'm thinking, oh, geez, maybe like tore his sphincter or something. And he goes, Dad, look. I pooped in the shape of a C. And I sort of pause and he says, no, Dad, look. He's like pointing down, look. So I look in, it's a big old C. And he looks up at me with this angelic little face. And he's so proud. He goes, it's a C for
We're gonna have
You can bleep out the just who it's for, yeah, but yeah. The point is for the first initial of his older brother,
as in his honor,
a sign of filial love. He pooped in the shape of the first letter of his name.
Yeah,
really great.
I would say that's in the spirit of the Frank Carvel joke. Remember that one? You remember Frank Carvel? Sonny won't appreciate this, of course, but remember the joke used to be, how does Frank Carvel take a shit? And it was like...
Fudgy the whale?
No. It's a physical joke. So you have to see me moving around like a soft serve. He's doing it like a soft... Yeah, he's doing a soft serve because the commercials were always...
Does he spin?
Yeah, like if you could see me moving, Sonny, it's really this thing. And because Carvel is an ice cream... place, and it was very popular, and Frank always had this husky voice like this. Caravellis, right? He was Greek, but the commercials were all these close-ups of the soft serve machines like pumping down the ice cream, and so that was the joke.
Wait. So is this the same like Carvel ice cream cake?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the one.
That's the one.
There was... Oh, interesting.
From New York.
Fudgy the Whale.
Yeah, that's right. Whale.
Chip. What is the other one? Chip. Cookie Puss.
I know that one because I was over at a dinner party many years ago with my lovely wife. Over at the Fontenins, you know, Brian Fontenin, you know, a listener and friend. And we were at their house, and I had a lot to drink. And it was one of those dinner parties where I'm clearly drinking more than anybody, but I don't care.
Is the punchline, show him your cookie puss?
No. Well, this is what JVL, I said exactly that because I said, oh yeah, you were talking about Carvel. And I said, remember?
No.
And I said, you know what my favorite one is? My favorite of them, because remember, Whale of a Day, Fudgy the Whale. And I said, yo, I loved Cookie Puss. That's not, no, and I didn't say Cookie Puss, actually. I said I loved Pussy Cook because I had, you know, my spoonerism kicked in when I'm drunk. And a couple seconds go by and the whole table's silent. And they're like, oh, what? And then Brian, very, very calmly, Brian goes, I think you meant Cookie Puss. And I go, what? What? I said, oh, sorry.
Meanwhile, Kate is just sitting there staring down at her plate.
It was the same night that we left.
Shaking her head.
It was the same.
I feel like she's probably used to it by now.
Yeah, she is.
She probably didn't
and
even
I
hear
thought it.
It
was brilliant. I thought it was a brilliant mix-up on my behalf. That it was completely unintended to actually call it Pussy Cook. And then after that, we were going home, and I thought we had passed by one of my favorite diners, Metro 29, but we were way out. We were way, way out. We were in Fairfax, and I said, yeah, that's right, because Metro 29 is not in Fairfax. So I said, quick. I said, there's the Metro 29. She goes, that's not. No, that's it. That's it. Let's go in. And she goes, I don't think that's it. That's it. So we go in there. It's not the Metro 29. It's a completely different place. I mean, we're out like near Vienna. And so we're sitting in there. And like 15 minutes go by, I'm inside and I look around and it's a small rail car diner. But it's not very good. And I just said to Kate something like, wait a minute. This isn't the Metro 29 diner. And she's like, yeah, I've been trying to tell you this. But she just nodded along, pulled into the driveway, went in, decided to humor me. And as I order my Western omelet, because, you know, you can get that anywhere. But it was one of those nights.
You know, Pussy Cook would have been an interesting cake design.
I don't know what any of those words or restaurants mean.
Meaningless.
Make any sense to me.
Meaningless, sorry, now that you're out there.
You mentioned the Carvel cake, and I ran out of the room because I was trying to find something that I'm reading, but I had to look it up on Amazon instead. But there's I was very excited to hear you mention this because I'm reading Paul Fussell's class, A Guide Through the American Status System, because David Brooks mentioned it in one of his big Atlantic piece about social anthropology, whatever.
Why I love the Bobos now, or why I hate the Bobos like, now? Whatever. I forget which way David has gone on them.
Bobos are bad, I think, still. I think they're still bad.
What's funny is that it took David this long to figure that out.
Yeah. Well, I think he always kind of knew they were bad.
I'm pretty sure I realized that when I was fact-checking the first version of the piece. I was like, these are the bad guys in the story, David. Why are you so soft on them?
Well, I think, I don't think it was. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The point is, I'm reading this book because Brooks mentioned it, and Carvel cake is a signifier of very low status. Just as a heads, you don't want, if you are, you got a Carvel cake in your freezer, get rid of it right now, or
you're
Paul Fussell's going
to
come and laugh at you.
It's the best, including
because
the flying saucers.
The prol class. The prol classes.
The prols. Who, you know what? I know that.
That's like
as
the doctor's
know, as
kids.
As you're aware of, the prols is
yes,
short
from 1984.
For
it's from 1984.
But the prol class, they love sweet. They love sweet. Their cocktails are sweet.
And the,
their food is sweet. And their desserts are very, very sweet.
And,
so,
and the Bobos or the bougie class like?
The Bobos, well, the upper middle and the upper, they prefer more of a not sweet cocktail. Like you're looking at, you know, more
like
more
us, like
stronger,
you and me, Sonny.
Strong. Yeah, like
martinis.
You and me, right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm. But only before. If you're drinking martinis afterwards,
no. You can never drink a martini after a meal.
A dry dessert sherry maybe afterwards. That would be fine.
That's right. That's right. Okay.
Anyway, this book is fascinatingly snobby. I'm actually very into it, even though it's taking me a friggin' month to read.
Are you identifying yourself in the book? Like, oh yes, check.
I'm trying to figure out as I read it, because this book was written in 84 or 85. So as I'm reading it, I'm trying to figure out like what has changed and what hasn't, and how much of it is me just kind of hoping things have changed and not giving away the fact that I am low
from
status,
the 80s.
A
that's
low
really
status
interesting.
Individual.
So around the same time as that preppy handbook, anyway.
Yes, it's the preppy handbook is referenced several times in this. It's really, again, it's really just a very interesting piece of social anthropology.
It's a snapshot.
It's very funny and it's very mean. It's very, it is a cutting. It's like if Tom Wolfe took off the kid gloves. Imagine that.
But I think what's interesting is these things that you're identifying as, or that he's identifying as very sort of prol, right? As very low class, like Carvel ice cream, for example. And it remains that until they decide that they're going to be ironic and then start consuming it, and then suddenly Pabst Blue Ribbon and Carhartt jackets are now trendy, something like that.
Yeah, it's all about what the invisible upper class decides to do. Mm-hmm. That's like really what it comes down mm-hmm. to.
Okay.
The people who have driveways that go off into the woods. Once those people
like,
decide,
like Tony Soprano, you mean?
The people who have No, Tony Soprano is
oh yeah, he'd be very yeah,
very is very, gauche, very like very, yeah. He I mean he has money, so he's not a prole, but he has prole sensibilities.
That's
for
right,
sure.
How he spends it.
Victorino, how are you, buddy?
I am recovering. I had a bout of a stomachache that lasted for a while, and it's because I made a wonderful pork stir fry the other day, but then I couldn't resist and adding to the pork stir fry, which already has a soy sauce and oyster sauce mixed in with onion and green pepper and stuff like that. I added the prick dong.
Prick dong.
And
did
I had a.
You slip it in there?
I slipped it in there. I had an overload. I had an overload because I actually harvested more chili, so I put it in there. I overloaded on the prick dong, and the lesson
was it
is,
like spilling out all over your face?
That's just, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're suggesting, but my point is, if you have, if being really serious here, if you have, for anyone who is interested, to be warned, if you have too much prick dong, you'll be sick to your stomach. Just ask Rod Stewart.
Oh.
I'm kidding. Oh. I'm kidding. Oh. That was a lie. Yeah, sorry. I couldn't resist. But I did have a stomachache. And I thought,
You tried real hard to resist it, too. You were like, oh, boy,
I felt
bad.
I better not
one.
Bring this rumor up.
I better not mention this.
It was a rumor spread by his bodyguard, who was, you know, had a beef with him, so to speak. Anyway, it was a lie. And you know what else is a lie? I heard is the release date for Top Gun. What is going on there? Sonny, you were in a state about it on Twitter, and I don't know if Jonathan heard you rant about this, that
Paramount pushed back the release of Top Gun 2 again, which in turn pushed back the release of Mission Impossible 7. Or 8 or whichever one it is. And they also took Jackass 4 off the schedule and pushed it back to February of 2022. And, I mean, look, they did it because they're worried about, you know, people going to the theaters. People aren't going to go to the theaters because of COVID. They can't go to school, so you certainly can't go to a theater. Can't do that. But but you know what they're thinking is, well, you know, it's going to get bad here in a few months, and people aren't going to want to go to theaters, and you know, who knows what's going to happen overseas, blah blah blah.
And what about James Bond?
James Bond's still on the schedule for now. That's MGM and Eon, but we'll see what happens.
It's
going
to go direct to Amazon Prime at some point.
It's still going to show up in theaters. I mean, look, here's the problem is there are several issues with this. The first big issue is that they've been advertising this movie for like a year and a half now already. It was supposed to come out a year ago in July. So it was supposed to come out 15 months ago or whatever, 16 months ago, 12 months ago, 13. I don't even know how many months, some number of months ago. It was supposed to come out a while ago. And so they've been advertising it for like a year and a half. They've been advertising it for like 18 months. By the time this movie actually comes out, they will have been advertising it for 2 years plus, 2.25 years, something like that. And at a certain point, people just tune it out. People are like, wait, I thought that already came out. I thought that movie had already come and gone, and I'm waiting for it on Redbox now. Like, that is literally how people think. I assume this is how a lot of people think about the James Bond movie.
Yeah, they've seen so many trailers that they think.
The James Bond movie had another trailer release this week because it's coming out in a month. They're like, yes, this is it. One last final push to get this movie out. And like, I've seen the trailer in front of literally every movie I've gone to for the last like 2 years. I've been seeing ads for this movie for 24 months now. And I think that at a certain point, you just get to the point where people are like, Didn't that already come out? What's going on? Why am I seeing this in theaters
or
now?
JVL? Are people so excited because they've been jonesing for it, and so they are. It's like edging, like they're right. It's like just right up, just ready to bust and go anytime. Oh, it's been 2 years. Oh, I want to go see it. Maybe it could be
I don't think that's it.
No.
I don't think it's like that. I think it's... It's just real. It's real frustrating to watch these theater, these movie companies like just shoot themselves in the foot over and over again. The people who are nervous about going to the theaters now are not going to be any less nervous in March of 2022. It's never going to end. And they need to accept the fact that a certain number of people aren't going to come out. Anyway, and write those people off, and just put what they have in hold and in ready to go out into movie theaters.
AMC no longer needs to show movies to be a viable business. So it's not like you have the distributors, right? AMC is now a meme stock, which means that its income and valuation is completely untethered to whether or not people pay money for movie tickets and popcorn. And this is I do not think that movie going as we remember it
will ever.
Going back to, I believe the last pre-pandemic movie I saw in a theater was Harley Quinn. And
that's a good question.
It was either Harley Quinn or The Gentlemen. And I don't think we are ever going back to that pattern of consumption for movies.
Well, I think that is the past. Like summer blockbuster movie
release.
We're
certainly not going to do it if the distributors keep saying, we're gonna keep pushing things back. Because people will just stop going to the movies. Mm-hmm. People have stopped going to the movies. You have to get them back into the habit of going to the movies on a regular basis. I'm very curious to see how Shang-Chi does this weekend. Looking at the
So that's a go. There's no changing that.
No changing that. It's coming out. It's not going to be on Premier Access. I think Disney is also very interested to see what it does, because if it opens to $50 million, that's pretty bad. That's a bad sign. If it opens to $100 million, that's $20 million better than.
I'll take the under on $50 million. I'll take the under.
No,
this is a property nobody knows anything about with no stars in it. Pass.
It's a Marvel movie. It's a Marvel movie.
So is Black Widow. Yeah. And that had a star in it on a character that everybody knows.
So,
yeah, but it was also on Premier Access. I mean, look, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. I think it does better than $50 million, but I don't know. Looking at the Thursday night screens and how many seats have been sold.
More. Yeah.
It is looking very similar to Black Widow in terms of the number of seats I see sold
for the
Thursday
first
night.
Weekend. So an extended weekend, a 4-day weekend or a 3-day weekend,
we'll
whatever it is.
We'll see. I don't know.
So Black Widow.
To answer your question, Vic, it is very, very frustrating to see the news about Top Gun 2, because like at a certain point, people are just going to say, I don't care about this movie. Right. Why would I go? That movie was always. Well, I don't know. I have thoughts on whether or not that movie would have been a big hit anyway. Mm. Feels like an old property being resurrected for no good reason. But like whatever. At a certain point, like people are just going to be like, I don't know. I thought this came out already. Why is it in theaters now? Why isn't it in? You know, why am
but
I not watching it on Redbox?
I mean, the other part of this, Sonny, is that the studios themselves have conflicting motives. I mean, they are all so obsessed with their streaming services because that is where their stock valuations are tied to.
Sure, of course. Yeah.
That they can't figure out whether it's better to push a movie out and get an extra $150 million in income on the movie in theaters, or whether it's better to delay it and then just push it onto P+. And if that gets us an extra 50,000 subscribers, then blah, 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 blah. Yeah, you know, especially because like Paramount is looking to get bought anyway. I mean, this entire situation is so fucked. And this is an industry which is, it's like the meteor is heading towards the Earth and the dinosaurs are all fighting each other. Mm-hmm. Not realizing that there is an extinction level event heading their way. Mm-hmm. And it'll be amazing if the movie business survives these idiots.
It'll be amazing if the theatrical business survives these idiots. Because, I mean, people will still want to watch stuff on Netflix
and
HBO Max. People will want to watch stuff.
But like, the stuff will be very different, Victorino.
It will be. Thank you for that, JVL. I see where we're going. I was going to say, I am going, I say, that is going to be our episode next week, is The Legend of Shang-Chi, or in the Seven Rings. And I'm looking, and it's only going to be in theaters. So Black Widow, also Disney, they decided to do simultaneous, right? In theaters. And then their next movie, a Marvel movie, they decided they're just going to do it. I'd like to know why they thought, oh, we're just going to do it this way, the other way. And I'm sure Scarlett Johansson's like, this is completely unfair, and that's why I'm suing. But
I mean, Disney is kind of experimenting.
Yeah,
at this
they're
point.
Just feeling. They're just feeling their out, way in the dark here. What works?
They're trying to figure out what is the best way to maximize revenue for them.
So,
and I think that the it's a very interesting experiment here. The star of Shang-Chi got very upset with Bob Chapek, because Bob Chapek, in a earnings call, I think, said, this is an interesting experiment. You know, the results that we're going to see on Shang-Chi are an interesting experiment in the box office. And he was like, for the millions out there who are waiting for the representation in the screen, we're not an experiment. We're the future. And like, okay, whatever, guy.
Is it the future in China? I don't think they're seeing it in China in theaters, or maybe
my understanding is they still do not have a release date scheduled.
Really?
So.
Yikes. Disney
has to commit to massacring 1,000 Uyghurs themselves. Bob Chapek has to personally kill 1,000 Uyghurs before the CCP will grant.
Just give it a couple weeks. Bob Chapek doesn't have 1,000 Uyghur souls soul stone.
He's working on it. But it'll be interesting to go to the theater then for us to actually see this movie.
I never stop going to the theater. That's right. I go to the theaters like every week.
I saw two movies last week in the theater. Principle. It was amazing. I did Paw Patrol, and then I did Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, right.
On the big screen at the Alamo.
Were either crowded?
Between the two showings combined, there was one other person.
Wow. Yeah. So that's the big question. Is because I had to see Pig, and that was like a medium. It was one of those smaller theaters. But for something like Shang-Chi, it's going to be a bigger theater. It'll be interesting to see how crowded it is on Labor Day weekend. Pig?
Oh, pig.
Pig, yeah. But after this, I don't know. I'm looking forward to this, and afterwards I'm probably going to go to a Chinese restaurant to celebrate. Maybe I'll get a happy family. As long as it's not followed by a happy accident. Speaking of which, this week we're talking about Bob Ross, happy accidents, betrayal, greed, love, murder, death. Sorry. Sonny, how about this is on Netflix. Sonny, how about a big boy review?
If you have a happy family and then there's a happy ending, happy accident. Oh, do you get a happy ending?
It depends.
I gotta say, B minus transition there.
You know, there's only so many.
A little bit forced.
There's only so many of these I can do.
Felt a little bit. So Bob Ross, happy accidents, betrayal, greed. That's a thing that's on Netflix. Here's all right. So when I first saw the promo materials in an email from Netflix for this movie, because you know I'm a very important film critic. I get all of the advance release images and trailers and stuff, and they're like, please, Mr. Bunch, tweet this out so the people can see about our movie. And I'm like, have a little bit of self respect. When I first saw the trailer for this, I watched it and I was like, this feels like a parody. This feels like a parody. Like they're making a true crime parody documentary by taking like a generally beloved figure. And I think Bob Ross is still 25 years after his death considered to be a beloved figure amongst, just the general population. People like him. People like his happy little trees. He's got a very soothing voice. You know, everybody loves Bob Ross. And I thought they were doing like a comedy thing where it's like, Bob Ross, betrayal and greed. What is going on? We can't even show you the trailer for this movie. Because there's so much hidden drama, and we could get sued. And I was like, okay, this is interesting. This is like let's see what's actually going on here. And it's not. it's not a parody. It's a straightforward documentary that is like half about Bob Ross's rise and, you know, the various things that he did on TV. He was, you know, he had mentors and he, you know, did the whole learning how to, he was in the Air Force. He learned how to paint. And then he became, he was doing traveling around the country, giving lessons, and people loved him. So like, you should have a show. And then he had a show and the show went on for 15 years. It was great. Everybody loved it. But the betrayal and greed part of this is like the thing that they're selling here. And the betrayal and greed is the most boring controversy I've ever seen put to film ever.
I felt like,
ever.
It, I mean, like, I this felt is, like it took up all of 15 minutes at the very this end.
This is the crux of the film is that there's a conflict between Bob Ross's son and the people who run the Bob Ross Institute or whatever, Bob mm-hmm. Ross Institute, Incorporated, BRI, yeah. Bob Ross Incorporated, right, whatever it is. And the people who run Bob Ross Incorporated, it's this married couple, Annette and Walt Kowalski, you know, and he was in the CIA, and he recorded his business phone calls. Whoa!
With a suction cup.
And Annette and Walt, it sounds like kind of screwed Stephen Ross out of, you know, his son, out of his kind of like family inheritance. It sounds like he got kind of a raw deal out of this. I don't give a fuck. I don't care about any of these people. I don't know any of them. I don't care about the son. I don't care about these two creepy old people. Like, we're talking about like a little bit of money. We're not talking about like billions here. It's not like shareholders mm-hmm. were built mm-hmm. out of, you know. It's a petty dispute amongst people I don't know and don't care about.
Which is why
and that's
the
like
stakes
the whole,
are so
that's
high.
The whole hype of this movie is like, look at this, look at the betrayal and the greed, and I don't care. Don't care about any of it. Don't care. It's not an interesting human drama. Nobody talked on camera for this thing. they keep talking about how like everyone was afraid of getting sued. And Annette and Walt Kowalski don't talk on camera. It's basically just the son complaining and one of Bob Ross's old friends, they got a lot of photos together, kind of arms over shoulders.
Oh, Dana, the other artist.
Am I wrong?
No. Yes, you're wrong.
Was the movie throwing off a vibe?
No,
there?
I didn't get that vibe. It was okay. A different time.
Anyway,
it was a different time.
So anyway, the long and the short of it is that the movie is boring. It's an incredibly boring movie. JBL, you texted us. You were like, every single Netflix movie, every single Netflix documentary needs to be watched at 2x speed.
1.5.
And that's 100%. 1.5. I mean,
if they had 2x, I would watch it in 2x.
At 1.5 speed. And totally. There's nothing interesting here. There's nothing worth watching. It is the apex of algorithmic programming. It is this idea that Netflix, you know, they have... There are things that work well for Netflix. One thing that works really well for Netflix is true crime. You know, mm-hmm. from Tiger King,
oh yeah,
to the Boston Art mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. show that we talked mm-hmm. about, to the killer in Los Angeles, the Richard Ramirez case,
Night Stalker.
That documentary, the Night Stalker documentary. Like all of these things are like they do very well for Netflix. They're not expensive to make. They're you know true stories, so people are very into them. And this one is no exception. It was in the top 10 of Netflix's trending, you know, mm-hmm. it was number eight most watched. Maybe that's not really what it means, but whatever, number eight. And people are into it. People are talking about it. People are talking about the Bob Ross documentary. People want to see the Bob Ross documentary, but it is like a computer program sat down there like, let's find the most incongruous true crime story we could find and make it a thing. And it's going to be Bob Ross, the happy guy with the happy trees. What if there's a dark underbelly to his whole empire? And it's the worst. It's the worst. It's very boring. And the funny thing is, there were little bits and pieces here and there where they could have made this into a funny thing.
Mm-hmm.
They could have made this into a real, like, actual real-life comedy. But it would have been cruel. It would have been cruel to Steve Ross. It would have been cruel to everybody
it
else
could
involved
be a
with
movie.
This thing. It would have been... You could have made a funny, real documentary about these people that is just about how ridiculous they are. And JVL, I wish... Exactly, like a Christopher Guest
documentary
movie,
about this, yes.
Yeah.
But I JV, I wish you hadn't sent us this text message, because this is my absolute favorite thing about the movie, and I wanted to spring it on you guys to surprise you, but you saw it. At the end of the movie, the big triumphant finish is Steve Ross decides to start painting again.
This is Bob's son.
This is Bob's son, who nobody gives a fuck about. Nobody in the entire universe cares about Steve Ross at all. But Steve Ross, he gets back to the painting, and he is doing it. He's getting on the horse again, and he's sitting there and he's painting, and you're like, God, look at that landscape. It's so good. And then over him in the studio, looking down on him like the Holy Mother herself, is what I can only describe as a 1970s van painting.
Yeah, it was kind of thinking you'd find on the side of a van.
It's like ripped off the side of a van that is inhabited by somebody who loves Boston albums and smoking weed and reading J.R.R. Tolkien, and it's like a topless woman climbed up on top of a man,
yes,
with like waves in the background. And that's it. That's the only thing on the wall. It's the only thing on the wall. It's the only piece of inspiration.
It was like something that was like, I don't know, it was like Eros, Aphrodite, if I get that correct. Or it was like the Pygmalion thing. It was like something weird was going on there. And I'm
trying to figure out where is it coming from. Almost.
Did he paint that?
Or was that inspiration? I would assume he painted it. I don't know.
We are never shown him painting anything other than landscapes.
But this is for me, if you were to make an interesting version of the movie, it's all there in that 2 minutes.
Yes.
It's all there where you have this clearly deranged person who is deluded into his sense of importance in the grand scheme of things, and frankly, the sense of importance of his father, who again, people really liked and was an inspiration, blah, blah, blah. But like, he's not Michelangelo.
And it sucks that the son does not have ownership of his own father's paintings. I get that. That sucks.
Totally. I mean,
unfair.
It is one of these things that is like, life is not fair. It sucks. Like, I feel bad for the guy, but I also don't care. I just don't care. But like, there's a nugget of a movie, mm-hmm, that is just that shot of this person who is doing these wholesome landscapes.
And there it is in the back
with the naked woman. Just
this is literally the Chris Guest, right? I mean,
it's so funny. Yes,
Michael McKean plays the Steve Ross character, right?
Yes.
And he's talking about all
Chris
this.
Chris Guest would be Bob Ross, but
yeah.
JV, it's so funny that you should mention that, because when I saw that, because I saw it almost simultaneously as you had sent the pic. So I immediately, you sent the pic first, and I saw just the little image on my phone, and I said, I'm not going to click it on yet. And then all of a sudden I see, I know exactly what he just
did,
took that picture. And the first thing that came to my mind was from Spinal Tap, when he plays that beautiful song, and they go, what is that called? My Love Pump.
I call that Lick My Love Pump.
You know, I was like, oh, what? And it was exactly that. And of course, I mean, there it is. It's perfect. That would have been it. JVL, what are your thoughts on this?
You know, I have a lot of thoughts. I watched on 1.5 speed. It's an hour 37 minutes long, and it was still way too long and dragged, even on 1.5. I think there might be 30 minutes of interesting material.
Compact. You can speed through the years. We did not actually have to go through each season of the Bob Ross season.
This should have been a 4,000 word essay in atavist. This is not a movie.
I don't know what atavist is.
It's just one of these, like, you know, Prague literary magazines. And it's totally unimportant. It's forced. It's hackish. It does. Not hackish is the wrong thing. It does two things, interestingly, just qua documentary, that I did appreciate. And one of which is that all of the moments in which crappy documentaries do recreations while they're, you know, somebody is doing voiceover and talking,
yes,
are done in the style of oil paintings.
Yeah.
Which is nice. Like that's a nice choice. And the other thing is, there's a lot of moments when they go to voiceover, and what they do is they just sit the camera somewhere doing B unit footage of a very beautiful piece of landscape, which is a very Bob Ross homage. Kind of, yeah, like, hey, look, we're just going to stare at this mountain while somebody else talks.
Yeah.
Because this way we don't have to show their ugly faces. And I thought those were both nice choices, I guess. This is the Netflix. You know, People who think that Netflix is going to become Tesla or Apple, Netflix is like CBS, but minus the artistic ambition. It's at best, Netflix is a roided up version of the Discovery Networks. And when you look at what they do is some, you know, those Discovery disaster porn shows. It's like, you know, what will happen when the Cascadia plates right. shift?
Right.
And it's like a whole hour of the recreation of how Seattle is going to be destroyed.
Earth yeah. without humanity.
At this moment,
yes,
that the one. People of Seattle have 19 minutes before the tsunami hits, right? And these things cost nothing to make. Mm. And it's just content. You just put the content. Somebody somewhere will click on it. And that's what Netflix is doing. And maybe that is sustainable, but how that doesn't get ultimately replaced by like TikTok or something.
Right.
I have no idea. I mean, because this shit is so low interest. I could barely keep myself focused on it while listening at 1.5 when I had other things that I was just like, I could be doing email. I could be doing work. I could edit a piece while I'm listening to this horrible, yeah. horrible thing that doesn't deserve to exist. But I do have one serious point to make about it, but I'll save that for a little bit. Victorino, no. What did you think? I mean, quadrant-wise, it's short. You could understand it, and it has that painting.
And it has that painting.
It's
basically like an A-minus because there wasn't much violence. But I had a lot of thoughts on this, I think, because I remember watching it at the time. I mean, what surprises me is that it went on till 1995.
Isn't that amazing? I always thought when I was a kid that I was watching reruns of something that had taken place 15 years ago. I never imagined that what I was seeing in like 1988 or 1990 right. was brand new.
So like one of the weirdest,
crazy.
One of the weirdest things is when he tries to do the kids show.
Oh,
and but it was like a casino when Sam Rothstein does Aces High, you know, and he's there. They're like, don't do the show, but he does the show.
The Sam Rothstein right. dancers,
right? Exactly, which is a great, by the way, which is a great little scene there. And that's the only way you can gauge, because if you look at the kids, they're little kids, but it's the 90s, so you can kind of tell. But he himself has not changed since 1979. You know what I mean? Like, he still looks the same. So that was the weird thing. When I was watching, when they're showing the old the clips, I wondered to myself, is it old because of time, or was it just always that bad? And when we watched it at the time, we never thought about it. Like, if you look at stuff from 20 years ago, footage from 20 years ago, right? From 2000.
Well, it was always cheap.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a public access show. Yeah. I mean, it was a public television show, but it had the it had the, you know, affect of a public access show. It was not inexpensive. And the whole thing about the show is that he is just like a soothing presence.
Yeah.
His voice. No, they talk about this a little bit in the
Absolutely.
Show. In the movie that his voice is like, it's like he's talking to a single person in bed.
Sensual.
That's what he's
Yeah.
And like it's just calming and soothing in a way that is like pleasant,
right? Yeah, it's sleep stories before sleep stories.
That's exactly what I remember is, you know, Saturday afternoons as a kid, you'd come across it, and when my dad is watching it, because my dad, you know, he when he's not working or doing other things, he also paints on the side. He likes to paint, and he's painted since, you know, I was a little kid. And he enjoyed watching them, and I remember watching them as well at that time, and you just fall asleep. You know, it's like around the same time as you'd watch, like, I don't know, on other channels, you know, on a Sunday afternoon, it's Kung Fu Theater, which I think was on Channel 17. But I liked it, and it was but it's interesting because a couple things. One, the basic structure of the Netflix documentary now is so, I mean, it's so, as you were saying, it's so formulaic. I mean, they're all sort of this, there's a cookie, like any of us can do this now because we know what the elements are. The other weird thing is, they do, you were talking about the oil and the landscapes and stuff, just, you know, for the dramatization. And that's something that all these documentaries are doing now, just to stretch it out. Again, we can get it down from an hour 36 or 37 to at least an hour.
You remember the Night Stalker documentary? They were close to like rats all the time. Like, you know, they just show animals.
It's, because
like,
it's stretching it out. Because you got to stretch.
Like slow motion animals.
You had to stretch it out. It is interesting, the world of public access. And obviously the real money was to be made in the merchandise, because he had such a look. As silly and ridiculous as he looked, it sold. And people liked it in, you know, again, in the popular culture, and you can identify with it. And it also is identified with somebody who's very calm, soothing, relaxing, very nice fella. But the public access stuff is really interesting. And I watched, I don't know how much, I used to watch a fair amount, even when I was like, you know, already like after college on a Saturday, I would watch, you know, some of those channels for the cooking shows. And PBS had some great ones. But what I didn't realize at the time is it's not everywhere. It's like every different affiliate decides what they're going to pick up or what they don't pick up.
Yeah.
You think of PBS as just a network, qua network, and that it's across the board, but it's not like that at all. And I enjoyed particularly the cooking shows. There was one called Martin Yan Can Cook with Martin Yan. And of course, Jacques Pepin had a great one. And Justin Wilson, who was ridiculous, who was this Cajun chef. I watched all those shows. Just a little bit of an interesting aside. A very good friend of mine, Kathy McCabe, who I went to college with, and she had started a newsletter called Dream of Italy, and, you know, develop a following about where to go if you go to Italy. And then a few years ago, before COVID, she finally got her own show on PBS. Called Dream of Italy. And it's great. So if anyone out there is listening, want to check it out, there's at least two seasons. And I remember asking her about it, and the amount of work that goes into not just the production, but the hardest part is getting the funding. That's the hard, you know what I mean? Because you have, in order, you got to go to everyone and do, I mean, you're just going out to everybody and having to do the pitch over and over and over again to so many different people to see who's going to bite in order to convince PBS to carry it. And which each station can decide whether or not they're going to. It's
to get $10,000
it's hard.
Lockheed Martin.
Right. No, right. And it looks like, oh, everyone's like, oh, man, I wish I could do a show like that. But it's not like they just come to you and say, hey, we want you to do this show. She's doing she has to do everything. So anyway, I thought that was interesting.
Were either of you guys struck by the weird inclusion of the moment where they're talking about Bob Ross getting cancer and they cut to one of his artist buddies? And they give him like 90 seconds to say, you know, he was always over that paint thinner and a lot of paint thinner. And
the allegation, you know, that it's like,
I just wonder if maybe that isn't what gave him non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. What the fuck are they doing to leave this in there? Like, I'm just, you're in the editing bay.
Yeah.
And you've got this guy again, a person nobody cares about.
This is the good stuff, Jay.
That has nothing to do with anything else. No, this was it. Wasn't it? Was just his friend. It was just like, also, it had nothing to do with anything.
They always mysteriously left the paint thinner cans open.
The thing he loved most, paint thinner, is what killed him in the end.
Again, just editing choice. It's
an incompetence. They show him slapping the easel.
Slapping
the brush. But that, because they had to create some sort of tension. All right, here's the other thing. The relationship with the Kowalskis, right? And are we to assume, I assume that they looked old then. Are we to assume in 2021 they're still alive? Because I think there was a phone
call. They are?
No.
They are still alive.
Because there was a phone conversation. I think the daughter agreed to speak on the phone very briefly.
No, the daughter was giving an interview somewhere else. Oh, it was archival footage. It was archival phone footage. Well, it was like a radio interview.
Insane.
No, there's a card at the end that said they had refused to grant an on-camera interview, and then they answered questions after it had been finished and said, we didn't do nothing.
Right.
We didn't do nothing. Well,
it's in the contract, which is true.
Wasn't me.
You got to read the fine print.
Wasn't me. I don't care. Who cares?
The idea. Oh, and then there was sex involved.
The idea that Bob was shtipping woman who's.
Of all the people, really?
I got the sense that, again.
You think it was a swinging kind of thing?
The way the documentary made it sound is that he was just kind of into anything.
Well, yeah, well, the old
chipmunks.
Man, you know what?
Down for whatever. Other,
chipmunks.
The other.
He's got that squirrel.
The
in
husband
pocket.
And wife. The husband and wife who were the, again. There's this kind of like a
flower painting
thing.
Husband and
yes.
wife.
And the old man was like, "Oh, it was the 70s," and it was, you know, it was, so everybody was, it was that kind of a
oh, and he says something like every, and his wife gives him this yes. look like yes. don't, because he almost literally says, "Yeah, we were all banging everybody,"
right?
And his wife was,
What's fascinating is, okay, so that, of course, like, really, if you're going to cheat on your wife with her, okay, that's something. And then the second thing is the groupie demographic, because there were a lot of women who loved him, but you look at the crowds that were, like, asking him to sign autographs and stuff, it's a certain type. If you're into that type, that's great, I guess. But that's not really the same as...
Saying it's not like...
It's not the, like other, the, like other groupies.
The joy of painting groupies.
Yeah.
That's what I'm not talking about. Not like NFL groupies. I'm, right. We could just leave it at that. Yeah. Yeah. Right? They look like the Anna Gasteyer delicious dish. Remember the
yes.
that's got, like, those are the joy
of painting balls.
The sweaty balls. Sweaty balls. I do want to say one thing semi-serious, though. Because there's a lesson in this story, except that the film itself gets the lesson wrong. That when you look at this, the Kowalskis, who are these villains and are the bad guys of the piece, the truth is they didn't get anything. They just got some money. They own some IP. They own the rights to use his likeness.
Supposedly millions.
But what matters is the work. And Bob Ross, even though he is dead, is the guy who did the work. And Bob Ross, even though he is dead, is the guy who people remember. And this is anybody who is involved in the creative life, be it as an artist or a performer or a painter, the only thing that matters is your creative work. All of the money stuff, all of the right stuff, all of that. The world is, the history of mankind is littered with creative types who got the short end of the business stick because they were not into the business end. They were creative. They were
Taylor
there
Swift.
To be artists. And the idea that, like, the Kowalskis have gotten something of value here is nuts. And the movie doesn't understand that. The movie treats all of the value as just the money in the IP. Like, the only thing that matters is the value in the IP. That is not true. Bernini is who gets remembered, right? Everybody remembers Bernini. They think about Apollo and Daphne and the Fountain of the Four Rivers. And
the column.
And you know, like, who do people remember, you know, Scipione Borghese? They do because he's the guy who bankrolled Bernini. That's the work is it. And this is something that I tell whenever I talk to somebody who's starting a book, the thing I tell them is that the only thing that you can have as a measuring stick for success on your book is whether or not you are proud of your book. Because everything else after that is out of your control.
Your control.
You can't control the reviews. You can't control the sales. You can't control whether you're booked here or there or everywhere else. The only thing you control is the words on the page. And so that has to be enough. Because it is a recipe for madness to go through life deciding whether or not you think something was a success or a failure based on factors you personally can't control.
Yeah.
And the extent that this movie misunderstands the creative life, I found, like, almost mystifyingly stupid.
Did you find it also a little bit of a distraction, the whole thing in the Netherlands, going over there? And then they interview the art buyer over there.
Yeah.
And then the allegations of forgery. There were allegations of forgery. See, that was...
But again, I mean, for a documentary about an artist to misunderstand what is important in being an artist is, like, almost hysterical.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's...
happens.
It's a pretty solid metaphor for Netflix.
Fair. Wow. Tough, but fair.
Wow. Am I wrong? I mean,
no, you're not wrong.
Like, I describe this as algorithmic programming, and I have a piece that should be up at the Bulwark by now. We're recording this on Wednesday. I'm pretty sure it's going up on Thursday. But like the whole point of algorithmic programming is that you can watch it without actually watching it. You can watch it and just sit there and futz around on your phone or talk to somebody or, you know, whatever, and it doesn't matter because it's just kind of background noise. This is the purest example of Netflix background noise I think I've ever seen, which is saying something because there's been a lot of it. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of it, and there's been a lot that's not very good. But this is just you throw it on and like you said, JVL, you answer emails or you run some numbers, you do a little bit of work that you didn't get time to finish.
Yeah, while it's playing in the background. Case in point, after the show, and by the way, I did want to mention, I watched it with Kate, and she said this was like Tiger King for 90-year-old women is how she described this.
That's pretty good.
Because they get
That's
excited.
Pretty good.
They get excited about the ooh, what's going on in the arts and crafts world, you know, the dark side.
But
of the
at least
arts and
in at
world.
Least in Tiger King, there's like an actual murder.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
guys
like
in
said,
jail
for old people.
There is at least the Tiger King show was again. It's like everything else with Netflix. It's 30% too long probably. Yeah. And
that was
multiple parts.
That was multiple parts, and that was like Netflix documentary at its apex.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's like the best version.
That is the best version
of a Netflix true crime documentary. Because again, they talked to a bunch of people. They had a bunch of weird, interesting characters who they actually got on camera. Yeah. And there was like an actual
murder
that
attempted
happened.
Murder.
Like,
you couldn't believe they're actually talking about plotting it and hiding and where they were going to kill Carol, etc. But case in point, after the movie ended, I noticed they had there's this other documentary called Count Me In. About the passion of drummers, right? What drummers love. So I look at the trailer. The trailer is great, right? The trailer talks about, I forget who's being interviewed and talking about how...
Is it Dave Grohl? It's always
Dave
Grohl.
Yeah, No, it wasn't Dave Grohl because that you would think it would be, but it wasn't him. But yet they were talking about how everyone wants to be like John Bonham, right? Everybody wants to be like John Bonham. He's the best, right? The whole thing. Okay, so I said, this is good. I stopped after 15 minutes. They stretch it out so long before, and they're just people who are just drumming in general and just doing their thing. And, they're interviewing some interesting people.
Animal skins were found stretched over bones in caves
they're doing
from 15,000 BC.
Some interesting stuff, but it's so slow. And they're talking, they're talking to, the drummer from Iron Maiden who's talking about his love of the drummer from the Dave Brubeck band. And you're just watching old black and white stuff, the Dave Brubeck. But, fine, and I like Dave Brubeck, but I thought it was going to be about John Bonham based on the trailer, and it wasn't. And that's something to be done because that would be really interesting. And I'm surprised there isn't one yet for Led Zeppelin because I think, Sonny, we're coming up on 50th anniversary of maybe Led Zeppelin 4. There's a couple of Led Zeppelin books coming out this fall.
Who knows? Yeah. It's been a long time for all this. Everything in the 70s is now
it's coming up
its
now.
50th
it's coming up.
I'm just excited for the 50th anniversary of the Bruce Springsteen in the E Street Band albums coming out. Because there's going to be a whole new vinyl release. It's going to be like, oh, look at this remaster. We're going to remaster all these.
Are you going to get them? You'll probably buy them.
I'll probably buy them because I'm an idiot. I'm a sucker. I'm a stone cold sucker.
Okay. Do we have any other thoughts?
No.
Okay, then.
This was more entertaining than that. Just watch this. Just listen to this
over and over
podcast instead of
and get some of our merchandise.
Honestly,
merch is great.
This show was 300% more entertaining than this stupid show on Netflix.
Okay, wait till next week's. Man, it's gonna be big. That's all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, complaints. Tweet us at Sonny Bunch, at Victorina Manis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on Patreon. Just go to subbeacon.com. We are there. Tell your friends. Until next time.
You skipped corrections. Somebody on the comments had a correction for us, but I've forgotten what it was.
Hey, how do we do on the...
We never make mistakes.
How do we do on the Val Kilmer poll?
Oh, let me pull that up right now. Talk amongst yourselves.
Okay. Let's see here. Captain Bill Dwyer, my brother-in-law, said to me, because his wife is such a, you know, she's a very serious runner, and he says, we're being put to shame because she's doing all, much more running than we're doing running. Why don't you and I, we should do one our own. We should do a triathlon, but an easy one. But an easy one. Is there such a thing as an easy triathlon? Like, what is like the easiest man. One? 1 mile, you swim maybe 10 laps, and then you bike for maybe
two miles. 7-Eleven.
You bike to 7-Eleven.
All right. Okay, I pulled up the results here. Right now, as it stands now, Vic Mattis has 99 votes. Sonny Bunch has 150 votes.
Oh!
And JBL has 162 votes.
What?
But there was no option to like set a time limit on this, so I think people can just keep voting on
it. Well, come
I guess.
On, man.
I don't know what the you got killed, Vic.
How
mean,
did I
no
get
offense.
Killed on Heat?
Well, I mean,
and I only got a chance to pick one. I couldn't pick two good ones. That's my problem.
Well, you
one.
Oh,
and,
oh,
yes.
oh,
yeah,
oh,
yeah,
it's always where I pick.
I picked one good one.
Oh, Vic.
And then
Vic,
after that,
Vic
Sonny,
never
hold
gets
on.
The right spot.
Then, excuse
Vic,
me. I
Vic,
took.
Oh, I
I'm always
middle,
getting screwed over on
got,
these polls.
You guys got two picks.
I've
always
no, totally
get
true. I got one pick, Sonny. I got one pick, and then like 10 picks later, I had one more again.
Yeah, I know.
It was one. You took five. Jonathan took five, and then the next one I took was the next one I took was that Moses.
Excuses,
it was like Heat.
Real men,
and Moses.
Real men step up to the
That's
plate.
All I
and
had.
They say, "I got
That's
look.
A,
I'm.
I was
I
left with
up.
Nothing.
I messed should have
been
up,
in the
I
middle, taking two. I never get to take two.
I did wrong. I did wrong with my picks.
You know what? It's a jip. That's what that is.
So you can't say that. Can't say that. So there's 411 votes. That's only a quarter of our listeners. You could still tip it to me, Sonny Bunch, your favorite, if you wanted to. But I wasn't 100% sure how to set time limits on this. I gotta look into how the Patreon polls work. But it's still open. If anybody wants to try and get in there.
It's not fine.
Steal it from JBL. Give it to me.
It's not fine.